Hello and welcome to another episode of Sales and Pepper Interviews. Today we have an English episode one more time, and I'm really happy to have Stephanie Herre here today. And we both will talk about emotional intelligence in sales. And before we do that, of course, like we always do, we want to know a little bit more about our guest today. So hello and welcome, Stephanie. And I would like to ask you to introduce yourself to our audience.
Yes. Hi, Dominic. I am so, so grateful and humbled to be here. It's time to have a Brit for sure. So let's start with, of course, the obvious. I'm a Brit, born and bred in London. However, around 7 years ago, I took the leap and joined the startup scene of Berlin. So I moved and I have not looked back since. In total, I have just over a decade of B2B mainly SaaS sales experience and 7 years of that in senior leadership roles, starting from the SaaS unicorn Freshworks, where I had the tremendous opportunity to lead various BDR organizations. Then I moved on to remote.com, where I led high-performing, hyper-growth AE teams. And my last position was as a VP of sales at a pre-seed cybersecurity organization. And along the way, I started to coach salespeople and leaders in skills like emotional intelligence.
Still here? Okay, yeah. I think we had just like a connection break. I didn't
we
hear
did.
You anymore, but don't worry.
I stopped. I stopped talking.
I would just cut it out. Just make like a little mark clip here. Good. So what was the last thing you said, Steph?
No, I said, and then, and along the way, I have been coaching salespeople and leaders in fundamental skills like emotional intelligence.
Yes, nice topic. Before we deep dive into this topic, I think it's very interesting, like when I look at your LinkedIn profile, what kind of companies you work for. Fun fact, you reached out to me on LinkedIn because of the artist circus and the speaker opportunity. And then we recognize that we actually know a lot of people, both of us from several companies, right? So if you work in this little bubble, like it's always very likely that you know people that you've worked with before. So it was great when we talked about this whole topic, and I think it's very an interesting topic. So what was your experience? Like you really made like a good career in sales already. So maybe let's talk about this before. It's like, how did you manage to climb the career ladder that fast and like also for that like really cool companies?
Well, to be honest, I have to go all the way back to my childhood. So I am the daughter of immigrant parents, and I had a tough childhood growing up. I became very attuned and hypersensitive to the emotions and the behaviors of the adults around me, mm-hmm. because I had such a kind of unstable and emotionally precarious environment that I grew up in. And this, you know, for a while, I was extremely socially anxious. I really struggled with this hypersensitivity. I was constantly worrying and thinking about what other people are thinking and how they are reacting to me. But over time, I actually realized that this hypersensitivity that I just naturally have is my biggest superpower. Yeah. In my career and in life. And hence, Dominic, a career in sales was very natural to me, had nothing to do with what I studied, which was geography and maths, nothing.
Yeah.
So it's really like this from a difficult childhood, really learning these hypersensitive emotional skills has enabled me to have such a successful sales career. I am certain of this. In particular, just thinking to the pivotal moment where I started my first leadership role. Just before, I was working as a strategic go-to-market executive at SAP. Mm-hmm. And I was used to kind of navigating complex challenges for SAP's enterprise customers, trying to bring a brand new product to market. It was an extremely high learning opportunity that I had. But the reason why I got the leadership role at Freshworks was because of my emotional intelligence. So the fact that I had a high self-awareness, so I understood, okay, what is my potential for a leadership role versus where I am now? And I could then articulate that to the hiring manager. I also really focused on what kind of a leader I wanted to be. So my leadership style, being empathetic, being a very good coach. So these are the sort of things that my emotional intelligence really helped me to get that first leadership role at Freshworks.
What would you say, like, because I think emotional intelligence is a big word, right? Like, how would you describe it to people that, like, thinking maybe about this and then say, hey, I don't know, am I emotionally intelligent? I don't know. It's like, how would you trying to describe, like, this skill, and how can you, like, learn it, right? I think it's because it's a soft skill. Like, I don't know if do you think you can learn it, or is it something you have and or you don't have?
Great question. So the good news is, yes, anybody can become more emotionally intelligent. Yeah. I want to just start from the beginning. As you said, there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
So we all know, we've heard these terms like EQ, EI, emotional intelligence. Yes, they are all the same thing. So whenever you hear these acronyms, it all means emotional intelligence. And in just one sentence, emotional intelligence is the ability to understand and regulate both your own and other people's emotions. Okay. However, another myth I see, Dominic, is most people think that they are emotionally intelligent, but recent studies, yes, I'm sorry to disappoint y'all, but recent studies have actually proven that only 36% of the world's population have a high emotional intelligence. That's pretty shocking.
Yeah.
So the majority are not. And I think the reason why, Dom, is most people think that EQ is just this like high level thing about knowing emotions. It's like, yeah, I know emotions. I know when I feel anger. I know when I feel sadness. I have a high EQ. But it's so much deeper than that. So there are, in order to answer your question about how can you improve it, you first need to understand the components. And there are five main components. And this is based on years of Harvard Business Review, like university research. Okay, five main components. Number one is one we're all familiar with, empathy.
Yeah.
Number two, self-awareness. Number three, self-regulation. Four, relationship management. And five, social awareness. Okay. These are the five main components. And it's possible with self-reflection to identify which components are you already quite high at and which components need work. And that's where you start. And nice. You apply this for your life and for sales, of course.
Yeah, that's a good coming to the next question. It's like you mentioned that EQ is super important when working in sales. Why is that? I mean, of course, you want to understand your like the other part, right? The other people. But why do you think it's a superpower, and why would you say that people that are emotionally intelligent are more successful in sales?
You know what? I always say the best sellers are rarely the best talkers. They're the best listeners. And that's why having a high emotional intelligence usually means you're a top performing salesperson.
Yeah.
It's the art of influencing others, not in a manipulative way. That's another myth. It's like, oh yeah, I have a high EQ. I'm manipulating customers to do what I want. No. Influence and manipulation are very different. It's a fine line. If you are able to truly listen and understand your prospects or customers, but not only that, you're able to validate and acknowledge their experience along the way, you are much more likely to influence them to make the buying decision that you want.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important. But it's hard because most salespeople do not listen well enough. They do not display empathy enough in the sales process. They are not able to even read the room. So, you know, when like you see a salesperson, I've coached this many times, like just talking 80% of the meeting. Yeah. You're doing these monologues. You're just pitching.
Yeah.
That indicates to me that your social awareness isn't quite there because you're not able to read the room and see that your audience is completely disconnecting and not interested in what you're saying. So you're losing the deal every second.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because also there's like lots of tools out there, right, that actually helping you getting better in your demos and stuff. So where you have like this whole talking ratio and the AI analyzing what you're doing, I think that helps already a lot because that's exactly what you describe. Also, what I've seen in my career when talking to people that some people think they're like a really good salesperson. Then you look at the data and you feel like, hey, you talk way too much in this demo. And like studies have shown that you should listen more, right? So it's interesting to see like this whole development and how we can leverage technology also to be better in what we're doing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
You also mentioned like that your high EQ also helped you to make the career and being a better leader. Now we talked about salespeople, being better salespeople with a high EQ. Why do you think it's important to have a high EQ when becoming a leader? Why is it better to have one?
Mm. Well, leadership to me, anyway, is about making a positive impact on other people's lives.
Yeah.
And how do you make a positive impact on other people's lives? Well, you're able to make them feel seen, heard, and understood, mm-hmm. and yet you're able to give them the direction that they need to grow. And when I think about this, what are the fundamental skills you need to do that? Well, you must be an empathetic leader, because without empathy, and even if it's just the first level of empathy, we can talk about that later, you are not able to relate to your people, and your people will not be able to trust you and learn from you. So empathy is foundational, and that's a core component of EQ.
Yeah.
Next is communication. The best leaders are the most effective communicators. And again, when I say communication, I don't just mean talking.
Yeah.
The best leaders are the best listeners. So they're able to grasp things in the room that other people miss. They're able to be proactive rather than reactive with their own emotions in difficult circumstances and conversations,
yeah.
which as a leader you face a lot, especially in today's very unstable geopolitical landscape. You need to keep your cool, master your emotional response, and then react from a thoughtful place. And that requires a high level of EQ.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so crucial. And I see that, Dom. The best leaders are the most emotionally intelligent.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, because also when I look back, I think a lot of leaders I've seen in my career always trying to, you know, be that positive role model by not showing emotions, but more like, you know, it's like always a high performer, always showing like everything is great and like pushing people. But I felt like when I had like a female leader back then, she was very emotional intelligent, I would say. And she really helped me also understand that it's okay to have a bad day, for example, right? Not everyone have always a great day. And she was so authentic in her leadership style that I really enjoyed working with her. Would you say like, is this connected? Like, you know, I would say like this whole, not showing off, but like being always the strong leader and like being emotional intelligent. Is this something that is connected?
What you said there about this very effective leader that sounds like you had was that she was authentic, and she didn't pretend that she wasn't experiencing difficult emotions. And that's also a key mistake I see many leaders make. By dismissing the fact that you have emotions, firstly, it's a lie. We are, as humans, we are emotional beings. And instead of trying to deny that we are facing emotions, why not actually acknowledge them and use them to our advantage? Okay.
Yeah.
To me, that indicates that they have a low level of, firstly, self-awareness and also self-regulation. And in the end, it's a very poor example to set to your team when you are saying, I don't have emotions, I'm only this one way. That is simply an illusion. And it's such a shame to not tap into the power of managing your emotions the right way. So there's a big link there. And I hope that most leaders, more and more leaders out there, embrace their emotional rainbow.
Yeah, I agree with that. Talking about like superpowers in sales, Stephanie, I mean, you're also working as a coach. What other topics would you say are like crucial for being successful in the role?
You know, there are a couple of techniques I talk about a lot. And I'll start with the first one, and that's labeling. Perhaps you've heard about it, labeling in sales, or just labeling emotions. What this means is, no matter if you're a salesperson, if you're a coach, if you're a leader, when you're interacting with another person and you're able to witness that they are experiencing an emotion. You can see, okay, I think this person is frustrated, or I can see this person is upset, or I can see this person is maybe a little bit anxious. The worst thing you can do is to dismiss that and somehow just, I don't know, either pretend it's not happening or, yeah, just leave it. The best thing you can do is to acknowledge this by labeling what you're seeing. So, for example, you could say, I can see, Dom, that you seem to be frustrated at the moment, or I understand that this is difficult to hear, or I can see that this is something that bothers you. Just this one sentence influences, lets the other person feel understood and heard.
Yeah.
And then you're able to influence the conversation in any way that you want, basically.
Yeah.
So this is one technique that is so important. And the next is mirroring. So as a coach, it's so important to mirror the person you're coaching. And I mean, okay, their body language, the pace that they're communicating, their communication style, and why. This is one of the quickest ways to build trust with another person, is to mirror their style, because everybody feels closer to people who are like themselves.
Absolutely. And I think I agree also that when I look at like successful sellers in the past, I think they were also really great at mirroring customers, right? It's like reading like the emotions, but also like the behavior. What kind of person is the other one? And finding common ground and connecting, I think, helps a lot to move the deal forward, right? Not only as a leader, but also as a salesperson.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's finding the commonalities, and you put the other person at ease when you mirror them. It's such a beautiful way to build trust.
Yeah. Looking back, I think also what I've seen a lot is, like you just mentioned, like also having tough conversations, right? Also with customers, but also with employees, I think is one thing that people sometimes struggle with, like, you know, what you describe is like you can feel that something is off and you maybe not connected that well with the customer, but you're not talking about it. And I think that was also something I've learned back from the previous leader. She was really great when it's like having the demo, and at one point she recognized that the person that doesn't really feel it, like excited about it. And she was just stopping and say, hey, I have the feeling that you're not really happy about this, where this whole conversation is going, and my job is to excite you with the product. Like, what's wrong? And I found this so inspiring at that moment, because sometimes I had this feeling as well, but I just kept going with my demo. And you know, it's like, and then the customer's ghosting you in the end because there was no connection at all, and they didn't say anything, you didn't ask the right question, and then in the end they will literally just ghost you, and then you are frustrated again, right? So how do you see this? Like, have you experienced something like
absolutely
this?
Dom, this is one of the top, thinking back, especially at remote and even at Freshworks, this is one of the top things I was coaching my reps on. I could even, like, just looking back at the call recording, it's like, hey, this is the moment to ask that difficult question. And the reason for that is, I think most people, most salespeople, have been trained to always get to the yes.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, as long as I hear a yes or maybe, I'm good. So I'm not going to ask the difficult question that my gut is telling me, okay, like something's wrong. You need to confront this. So I spent a lot of time being like, okay, how do you ask no questions? We flipped it. So I'll give you an example. It's like, okay, Mr. Prospect or Mrs. Prospect, at this point in the demo, it's important for us to understand, what are your major concerns at this point? So that's an example of a no question. You are giving them permission to actually open up and to share their concerns, rather than saying, is there anything at this point that's concerning? Yeah, they are more likely to not tell you the truth when you rephrase that question in that way. So it's just little tweaks in language to then actually give the prospect the permission to say no and to tell you the truth. I also always like to start, especially like a cold prospecting call, with, is now a bad time? Rather than is now a good time, right? Again, it's these little psychological tweaks where you use emotional intelligence. Yeah. Another thing is another technique that I have coached before is to use kind of paraphrasing of their situation. So as soon as you feel there's a disconnect, you pause and you say, okay, let me summarize my understanding of your perspective at the moment. And then you do that. And then you say, to what extent is this the truth or is this the case? To what extent is this the case? Yeah. Really, really worked well to get the other person to open up.
Yeah, love that. And I think what you just described also reminds me of a technique I've used a lot in the past when I was coming to the end of the demo and you were still unsure about how is the customer like thinking about your product. You just mentioned it. Salespeople always want a yes. They always think there's like a next step and, you know, they love your product and you want to close this deal. But some people are afraid of asking for the actual closing, right? So it's like also for me, it was not always yes or no. Sometimes it's something in between and maybe they were just unsure. So what helped me a lot was asking for like a scale. So it's like, okay, now you've seen my product on a scale from 1 to 10. Like how likely is it that you will purchase the product? Like in like we can onboard you in a week from now on. Like what needs to happen until we come to like normally they say like a 7 or an 8. It's like, okay, what's missing to get to a 10? And that helped me. Yeah, that helped me a lot back then, because then exactly what you described, you would get the information. What's actually the missing piece for the puzzle, right?
Excellent. I love that question, the scale. And what you said then, like what's missing? That's exactly, that's a no question again. Yeah. Great. Yeah, absolutely that. And too few salespeople do this.
Yeah, that's true. But you also mentioned like outbound sales right now. And I think like because now we talked a little more about the whole closing part and how to leverage this kind of techniques. I think what you've mentioned about the cold calling is also very interesting, like technique to ask like, is a bad timing now? I had one AE who was always doing this and he was quite successful with that. Is there other techniques for outbound sales that you know that people can use to book more meetings?
This mirroring technique I mentioned, I believe that is crucial. So, for example, if you are, you are cold calling and you reach the prospect on the phone, I always say, and this might be a contrarian view, but I always say, don't be overly enthusiastic and kind of, I don't know, jump down the phone at them. Instead, just have your normal tone, talk like you normally would, and even better, match the prospect's tone. And I don't mean like be kind of deadpan and be kind of, you know, uninterested, but they are more likely to be receptive to someone who is on their level than an over-enthusiastic kind of screaming, energetic salesperson who they've unfortunately had bad experiences with and cannot stand. So that's, again, it's these little nuanced things that one needs to pay attention to: matching tone, pace, using no questions, and reading the room. So, you know, I always encourage you to be respectful when you're doing especially outbound calling. If you have the feeling they're rushing you off the phone, shoving down your 1 minute pitch down their throat is not gonna work. The best thing you can do is to at least ask for another time to call back. So again, reading the room, this is so important. Social awareness again.
Yeah, I agree, and I think what helped me a lot in the past is like trying to walk in the other person's shoes, right? It's like trying to think about how would I feel when I would receive this call right now and how would I want to be called, like called, right? I think that also changed a lot because sometimes you're sitting there and you're trying to write down the best pitch possible for your product and then you're like, okay, basically what you just described is like people will know exactly what you want and they normally don't like to be sold on the phone within the first few minutes, right? So I think what I've also tried to teach our SDRs back then is try to think about not about the end goal of booking the meeting, trying to think about it, having a good conversation and trying to get more information out of this call. And also think about that you're trying to call a friend or like a family member, right? And how would you talk to them when you call them? It helped a lot to be more relaxed, and people will recognize this if you're relaxed. If you're like, as you said, like super enthusiastic, trying to pitch like 30 seconds or like even a minute of your product, and then you want to book a meeting with me, it will not work.
Oh, couldn't agree more, Dom. Yeah, be as relaxed as possible and as calm as possible, and tune into the other person's style. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember also like being cold called from a headhunter, and what I really liked about his call was he called me on my mobile phone, and normally I didn't receive any cold calls on my mobile phone as an AE, but he was like, "Hey Dom, how are you doing?" And he's like, "Yeah, good. Like, who are you?" And then he was explaining me, "Hey, I'm doing this and that, and I'm helping with this and that. Is this like something you can talk about for 5 minutes?" And I was curious, because normally headhunters don't cold call me, right? And I really liked his approach without pitching immediately, but more like open up in conversation. I really, really like that.
Nice. And you know, that actually reminds me of another technique that I talk about a lot. Is so important for sales. And I've had the greatest success for myself and also with my teams in the past. How do you pique curiosity with the prospect? Because curiosity is the key for you to get that open door for a conversation in outbound sales. So this story that you just said, like this headhunter, he piqued your curiosity enough. Yeah. So he leveraged some information and he shared a little bit that was relevant.
Yeah.
And that got you interested, right?
Yeah.
So it's also exactly like you shouldn't actually lay all your cards on the table, because then there's no curiosity for the prospect to want to continue to engage with you.
Yeah. I also, what I a little bit dislike about this whole, like, you know, teaching frameworks and stuff like this is like frameworks like Banter, for example, right? Where it's like budget authority, stuff like this. And it's like, it really, I think it hinders you to really be successful, because the other person, like, especially in the first cold call, like if you ask about budget and like who's the decision maker, this is like really very selfish and not working very well, and still being taught in many organizations. What's your experience with that?
Oh gosh, Dom, I have a deja vu. I mean, of course, I started my sales career back at Cisco in London. Yeah. As a BDR, we were taught to use Bant. Yeah? Yeah, this ancient, you know, this framework's from the 1980s. Yeah?
Yeah,
IBM created this 1980s, and we're still talking about Bant in 2024.
Yeah.
Okay, this is laughable, right? So, but you know what? I threw that out the window. Yeah, so I didn't use the script, because again, I just tuned into my natural conversational ability. You know, really try to focus as much of the attention on the prospect rather than my script. And when you do that, you find that you get the answers anyway. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to kind of have questions that you must ask prepared for the call. That's important, definitely.
Absolutely.
But not this rigid structure that makes the other person feel like they're in an interview and, you know, never want to talk to you again.
Yeah. I think also exactly what you just said, like thinking of possible questions and answers in advance helps a lot without having like a script like somewhere, but just to be ready for this question already helps a lot without start stumbling, you know. It's like I really agree here.
Yeah.
Stephanie, we already talking half an hour now, so I would like to come to my last question I'm asking every guest here on the show, and it's about you and your career and what kind of technique or like maybe even a habit helped you in your career and being better in what you do that you would like to share with our audience.
You know, I would, and I am going to share a mistake that I made.
Nice.
So this was back in London. I was very successful as a BDR. I was promoted to an AE role. But the thing is, I was the youngest woman in EMEA. So I was only 23 years old, and I was working in a team full of men in their 30s.
Yeah.
So I felt like as an ambitious me, I had a big point to prove, you know, like, hey, like, I'm young, I'm successful, I'm doing the sales thing all on my own. Yeah. So the missed opportunities that I got, I could have been so much better than the high level I was already at by asking for help. And I remember there was one colleague on my team. He said, "Look, Steph, you have everything going for you. Like, you are a great saleswoman. You're young. You have this great career in front of you. But the one thing you're lacking is you're not asking for help enough."
Yeah.
And this one conversation is stuck with me to today. And I really reflected on this. And then as I moved to Berlin and I had this fresh start, this is the one thing I made sure I did in every single role that I was working. I would ask for help, and because I realized I can learn from every single person around me. I don't need to pretend to know everything to be strong or to be seen as capable. Yeah. Asking for help, being vulnerable and asking for help is actually the ultimate sign of strength and growth. Yeah. So that's the biggest advice. Never think that asking for help is a weakness or it will somehow hinder you.
Yeah,
it's the best thing you can possibly do to grow your career.
I love that. It always also remembers me of one of our most successful SDRs at Pleo. When he started, he was actually coming from a totally different background back then. And he was also trying to understand the company, the roles, like, and also the product. So what he did is, like, he booked in coffee chats with, like, a lot of people, like C-level, like every manager, like just talking to them 15 minutes, like over a couple of weeks. But what he was able to do in that time is having a deep understanding of our product and services, because he was talking to, like, very experienced people and just asked them, like, what do you think about a product? What's working good? What doesn't work? Why should people buy our product? And just, like, within a few weeks, he was so much better than every other SDR that had normal onboarding, because he really went deep into, like, a discovery for our own product and services. And then also, of course, had, like, his internal network already, and, like, would know, like, when I have a question for, like, integrations, I can talk to these people because they know me already and I can just ask them. And that was, like, also very interesting to see, like, how he managed, like, with his young years, like, building this internal network and, like, being a product expert within a couple of weeks, was really inspiring to see.
Smart SDR. Wow. Yeah. That is, and, you know, you can do that by interviewing also existing customers. It's one of the best ways to learn. That's fantastic to hear. No wonder he was a superstar.
Yeah. Yeah. And also what you just said, like, what I did back then, I also read through all the G2 and stuff like this, all the customer reviews, what people like and dislike, that also helped me understand.
Absolutely. Great trick. Great hack for anyone out there listening. Yeah.
Great. Stephanie, thanks for being on the show today. It was a great topic. I really enjoyed the discussion. And I hope our audience also found some new inspiration here in the episode today. So everyone who's not connected to Stephanie, look for her at LinkedIn, Stephanie Herre. Thanks for being here today, Stephanie.
Thank you all for listening. And thanks for such an engaging chat. I really enjoyed it.
Perfect. See you soon.
See you soon. Thank you.